Hey, y'all, in this episode of the Carolina Chuck Podcast, we're going to talk to Glenn Curry. He's a local radio personality and host of the Live at 5 with Glenn Curry, which is known for talking about politics, local and national. So check out Glenn Curry. Y'all be good. Peace out. I got to get a stand. So I know, I mean, dude, it takes a long time to kind of figure out this editing stuff.
Oh, I'm sure. That doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, when I'm just a country dude from South Carolina.
No, you're doing a great job. And all the stuff you're posting on Facebook looks great.
Yeah, I found this AI program that when I post the whole video to YouTube,
yeah,
it'll clip it out. It'll clip it out, it'll hashtag it.
Right.
And make it look real. I mean, like you put a lot of time in it. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's
but the key dollars. That you're saying, though, you have to create the content first.
Right.
Which is more difficult. And, you know, AI is incredible.
Yeah.
And what it does to enhance it. But you took the liberty of giving content first. That's the big step.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a thing. I mean, dude, this started out at my kitchen table, and really it started on the Live at 5 with Glenn Curry. I was like, man, I kind of like this thing.
That's almost like the Caprera family. Frank was selling cars at it from his kitchen.
Yeah.
And that's how it all started.
Yeah, man. But look, so I've been seeing you since I moved to town. I saw you doing Widrix commercials. I've heard your voice everywhere. And then I finally got the courage to walk up and talk to you while you're taking pictures on
the cruise.
Yeah. And I was like, man, this is the guy.
Wow.
And then you invited me on your show, and I came on.
And a year later, Carolina Chuck's the guy.
And, you know.
The guy.
I mean, I'm trying.
No, it's incredible. Well, of course, I knew who you were at the cruise. That was last summer in Alex Bay. And I was equally as flattered to meet up with you that day because I already knew you, I felt, from all the Caprera ads.
Yeah, and that was cool, man. When Johnny came in, I got to cut a couple commercials. He said, all right, they sent us in there with like a bunch of sales guys, first one I did. And I said, hey, it's Charlie Winburn, FX Honda. You know, I didn't know what to do.
Right.
And then they said, well, we'll let you do your own one-minute spot. And I came on, I did one, and then I kind of was like, yeah. I knew kind of how to brand myself. I had to brand myself, and I know how to sell. I know how to make an ad. And then one of my customers said, hey, Carolina Chuck, can you do this for me? I said, I like that.
Wow, so came from a customer.
I got on the radio. Matter of fact, he called me the other day. I could call him back.
And, he wants royalties to that.
Yeah, probably. And then I got on there and said, hey, y'all, it's Carolina Chuck, and then just went wild with it. It was pretty cool.
Well, there it is. And of course, and not to mention the show.
Yeah.
But you and Nigel doing the ads still, going back and forth.
I finally was like, dude, we got to get on the radio and do one together.
It sounds great.
And I think it took off.
I love the part where, you know, you talk about the North Country and all this stuff over the last year, 2 years now.
Yeah.
And then Nigel says, oh, it's fall. There's a lot of things to do around here. And you go, like what? What do you mean? You knew all this stuff.
Yeah.
So what?
Right. So we just kind of fell off each other.
It's radio. It's theater of the mind. Most of it is mindless.
And I mean, honestly, Nigel's been a big part of bouncing ideas off.
Yeah, that's
me.
We
started walking the lot and talking about things. And I mean, he does his own thing. He's got his own style, but he's been a big influence on me too.
Well, a lot of the duos over the not to make reference, but Abbott and Costello were they were completely different people, in looks and everything and mannerism. But they were one of the best duos ever.
Yeah, I mean he does
not to make the comparison between, you, but no, anything that's done well, and that's what you guys have done. By the way, I knew Nigel. When he was working for Fasillo when he was first starting, So I knew right at the beginning that he had the gift of gab, which was not enough people in general, not just in the car business, don't speak up for themselves in front of a microphone.
Yeah, he does good, and honestly, I had a few people, and I had to know I had to do something different.
Right.
I don't have cousins and people I can call when I got up here. So
what are you talking about? Oh, up here. That's right.
Yeah,
I know you have cousins who come from Carolina.
I'm saying to reach out on social media to grab some people to come in the store. And so I had to get out there and make videos and stuff and post content. And I knew social media has been good to me. Facebook, for one, has been really good.
Oh, I'm sure.
And, you know, sometimes you need a cameraman. Sometimes you want to talk to somebody while you're out there. And
right.
He came out there and did it with me. But look, I want to talk to you about you a little bit. So you're from New York City.
I'm from Queens, New York. Yes, New York.
Yeah. And so how long have you been up here?
I came up here in November 13th, to be actually, Felix Unger's date from The Odd Couple, in 1988. And at that point, I had been in Connecticut for a couple of years. But prior to that, yeah, all my life I lived in Woodhaven, Queens. That's where I grew up. Met someone from our college. I went to Oswego State.
Oh, really?
And we had a relationship from there, and I got married when I came up here.
Oh, yeah.
That didn't work out, but I've been up here ever since. So it's like my next month. It's going to be my 36th year.
Wow, 36.
36. It's most of my life. That's for sure.
I'm 38.
And you're 38. Yeah. So wow, that's incredible. So you were 2 years old when I moved out. Yeah.
Yeah. So when did you start in radio?
I started because broadcast was a focus of mine in Oswego, and I didn't know where I was going, to tell you. A lot of people still to this day don't, but I started working at Channel 50,
really?
In its infancy, pretty much. And it was a great time in Watertown. It was a great time to be at that place. But I was approached by Dave Mance, who was starting a new radio station called, we didn't have a name for it, but it was a radio station out of Adams, which today is 100.7, the Eagle. But then it was a brand new station, so he asked me to manage it. He knew I was good in sales, working at Channel 50. I had done well there for the 2+ years, and I met a ton of people. And I knew right at that point, that's why your life is somewhat similar, and that I came from another area. And to me, it was a profoundly different place, moving up here and meeting all these different people. And it became home to me very, very quickly.
Yeah, what do you think is the biggest difference between here and down there? What do you think is...
I would say in the beginning there was a lot of differences, but today there's hardly any difference, not just between here and New York, but between here and, quite frankly, South Carolina. We speak differently, that's for sure. There are nuances, there are different things, but because of certainly the internet, but the network of things that we've been accustomed to. I'm a baby boomer, you're millennial, whatever. I can never figure it out anymore.
I guess I'm a millennial.
X generations after me, whichever.
Yeah.
But I think we're all pretty much the same now, almost homogenized together because of all the things that we all have exposure to.
What I was asking is, what made you, I would say, want to stay here?
Oh.
What was captivating about the North Country that made you really feel at home?
I think the big reason is, New York, obviously being the biggest place in the world, I always had this whole image of the world from where I was living in New York, where everything was, quite frankly, overwhelming. I mean, you're in the biggest city in the planet. You took that for granted, to be quite honest. But sometimes you thought about that, geez, what would it take to figure everything out to be successful here? And I didn't think of that consciously, but I realized moving up to Watertown that it was an island community. In that it is. It's separated in many ways, much more than, say, what Syracuse is to Auburn and Greece is to Rochester. You know what I'm saying? We are a separate place. We have a great lake to the west of us, Adirondacks to the east, a country to the north, and the snow belt, which no one wants to live in, to the south. So if you look at us on a map, we're a lake community next to a lake with a lot of lakes in it. And because of that, we're very isolated from the world, not entirely. So I recognize that you got to know a lot of everything around here quickly, as opposed to this would be impossible to do this in New York unless you made it, on the David Letterman show, whichever, and made it to the top. Being a part of a small community, you get to see the edge of the stage. So you know the player is better, and that makes you better. It makes you and I understand civics better because I took interest in city politics, and of course getting into the radio show. I got into a lot of other things, but being in a small community helps to make you understand not just where we are, but the whole scheme of things.
Yeah. It's like I don't know how to describe it. The way it is, it's structured like a big city, but it's super small. Right?
Yes.
So,
and getting smaller, unfortunately, in terms of population. We're down to 23,000. And when I got here, it was hovering over 30,000.
Wow.
Over that. But of course, things expand. The county got bigger overall. But Watertown has lost in excess of over 20% of its population.
And what do you think that's due to?
Well, a lot of it was, it was bound to happen, but, you know, everyone can blame industry, this, that, and the other thing. You know, it was an old town. A lot of people lived here a long time ago. It's just that a lot of people don't have to live here at this point, but we're still a very productive county. Thank God for Fort Drum. Thank you know, the government, half the people that work in downtown Watertown work for in some municipality. So that all that helps. And plus, we're in a blue state. And we get a lot of funding from Albany for non-for-profits and, and you know, other things that, that keep this society going. Without that, we would look like an East St. Louis or something. We would be falling apart. Yeah. So crime is very low here. That's probably something you notice.
Yes.
Crime is very low
here. I do. That's almost everybody I talk to on the podcast, we bring that part up.
I have my car door locked. I mean, I shouldn't be saying this on the Carolina Church, but I have my car on Lower Franklin Street parked out there. I do have it locked. But you wouldn't, for the decades that I've lived here, you wouldn't imagine how many times, not only did I leave the key in the ignition, I left the engine running. Which, if I ever lost my car, SOL. Stupid enough to do that. But that's how forgiving I've been. I just know that's not.
Well, if you lose it, I know a guy.
Yeah, well, exactly. I'll have to contact someone like yourself.
Yeah. But no, there it is. That's one big thing is there, and I pay attention to the news a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, just local news, just to find out what's going on around here, and it's no violence.
Right.
A very minimum amount of violence compared to where I was at. I was right under Charlotte, and it was wild.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah, dangerous town.
And, I mean, I know that there's some packages and stuff. Stuff gets stole, but nothing like breaking into houses. And,
right.
You know,
yeah. Riff-raff stuff. But it could that you don't want to see that. It's that's everywhere. But that is on the uptick, unfortunately.
Really?
Oh, I definitely. And again, I don't want to paint a dark picture.
Yeah.
But, you know, that I see it. And the reason why I say that, Chuck, is because over the time that I've lived here, it's incredible how many homeless people there are visibly. And I never dreamt something like that would happen. So with that level, when you start seeing that, then you know other levels of drug use obviously is up. And petty crime and something that leads to a violent or, you know, serious crime where someone gets caught in someone's house and then tries and kills someone in the process. That hasn't happened, thank God.
Right.
But that level of violence. But that's the next step. Hopefully that it doesn't happen. But it's not just here in Watertown. It's the post-COVID years haven't been very pretty in many, many cities.
And you know what's weird is speaking of post-COVID is – I've literally moved up here right after COVID. Like, I didn't even see it really open up. I mean, it never closed down like I hear about here.
Right.
But when I got up here, it was right after COVID. And I feel like people were just now coming. It was a strange time to come to a whole new place anyways.
Right,
you know?
Right.
But like the homeless thing. So to me, like you said, a small community to have homeless people like they do, and it's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of wild stuff going on.
But, you know, it's the thing that we discussed on my radio show is how these people, a lot of them, are from other areas. So while I say we get a lot of help from Albany, people from other areas, other states, other parts of the country know that. We're like on a roadmap of the help wanted for, you know, bring us your drug at, you know, bring us to your despondent here because we'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And it extends beyond welfare to the point where people actually get their divorces up in Jefferson County from the, you know, county of the Bronx because it's too expensive down there or, you know, it takes too much time. They want to get it over with. So New York State allows this proceeding, a divorce down in the Bronx, New York, to be done and completed in Jefferson County. And Jefferson County, by the way, gets the money to do all this. That's just a small example of many things going on here. The county supplies enough money and funding for things that actually support people to come here and live off the system. And unfortunately, some of them fall off another wagon and live here as homeless people.
And that is one thing I did notice is and even I would say it was on radio commercials and TV commercials about, you know, don't leave your friend, let your friend OD.
Right.
And all this, like, I didn't hear stuff like that. I mean, there's drug problem down there.
It's everywhere.
Everywhere. But it seems like it's sort of like...
it's under control, you say? Yeah.
Not under... Well, I'm not saying it's under control down there, but it seems like that it wasn't really, it's kind of a shameful thing down there. You know,
oh, you're right, like, right. Here it's almost like, yeah, yeah, hey, it's Amsterdam.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of a weird thing.
It's like New York State,
like, yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of you, you know, if you got call. You know, I don't know. It just seems more accepted.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And I know. Like,
and I'm not used to that, and I was kind of weird.
Yeah,
you know?
You're coming from a red state to a blue state.
Yeah,
where we kind of welcome that because there's money to be made, in stuff like that, and a lot of people, a lot of states, particularly blue states, look at that as an advantage.
Yeah, and some of the work and stuff too. Like the people just don't want to work.
Yeah,
like,
right.
And then
that's. I don't know if that's any different down by you or if that's the culture in general.
I don't know. This is the example that I have. I mean, I'm not putting down fast food or nothing,
but right.
There's a customer service that I'm not used to here. You know what I mean? Like, it is not really, it's just like, here you go, blah, blah, blah. And
so it doesn't have that Southern charm to it? Like you
Right. So I went down to see my dad a couple months ago. And I wanted some Bojangles chicken. Like, I was like, we're flying down there. We're driving.
Driving.
You know, I got a ticket in Virginia. I got to go around Virginia next time I go.
Yeah. You sound like a Kris Kristofferson song.
Yeah.
God rest his soul.
I know, man. People are just passing away left and right.
Yeah. Oh, bad week.
Yeah, it's crazy.
John Amos.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah, good time. And, I tell you what, JJ. No, I'm
So I get down to, I get into North Carolina. I find the first Bojangles. It's 20 till closing, right? But they already got the lights off because they're right off the exit.
Right.
And, you know, there's nobody in there. I get out, and I'm like, I see that they close at 10. I'm like, all right, maybe we'll see what happens. I kind of walk up to the door. They wave at me, unlock the door, cut the lights back on.
Right.
Everybody
gave you some coffee.
Everybody gets in their position. Look, the manager comes out, starts talking to me, you know, being super nice. Yeah. And it was just crazy. And then look, they came after I they fed us. Yeah. The manager came out and talked to me while I was eating and everything.
Right. It's a bit rude. Nice. No, it's good.
Yeah. Look, they giving me a whole freaking all the leftover food.
Wow.
Like the chicken.
Is this before or after you became Carolina Chuck?
This was like a couple months ago.
Oh, see, that's what I'm saying. It's paying off.
Yeah, and this is down there. But what I'm saying is...
Well, no, but don't they know that you're somebody up here?
Well, yeah, here they kind of know when I'm coming through the drive-thru. I hit the Tim Hortons over there, and they know me pretty good.
Right, everyone.
Tim Hortons is the reason I came to New York, by the way.
Oh, my goodness gracious. So, it's one of my favorites. I go there because no one else does.
Right. Well, look, we came up here on a vacation, and we're driving home, and... I talked to my wife's grandmother. She's like, y'all want to move up here? She's Billy Caprera's aunt.
Right.
So talking to him, it's in the works. So we're driving back south. This is right before I decided to move up here.
Yeah.
We crossed the border. I hit the Tim Hortons over there. I didn't know what Tim Hortons was.
Right.
I was like, what is this place? You know, we pulled in and I sipped that coffee. I was getting back on the interstate. I was like, Christy, I think we could move here, you know?
And, really?
Yeah.
And if you hadn't gone into the... Tim Hortons, you might not live here?
I might not.
Wow.
I don't know. I think that coffee, I remember the coffee. Like when I was making the decision in my head, that coffee was involved as I'm driving through Pennsylvania.
That's incredible. You should tell them that.
I'm trying to get a sponsor thing here.
Well, you got the Carolina Hurricanes because Tim Hortons was a hockey player.
Yeah.
That started in the 60s.
Well, I didn't know anything about hockey.
Yeah, yeah. So, oh, about hockey?
Yeah, I didn't know anything about hockey. I knew we had hockey teams down there. I went to one in Charlotte that was the Checkers. They weren't a big weren't a big thing.
The Chubby Checkers.
Yeah. And then we went to a Wolves game up here, and my wife's never really been into kind of any sports or anything, but she was like watching this hockey game.
Yeah, it's incredible. All levels.
Yeah, I'm like, wow.
Anyone who could skate and do anything.
I ain't never been on. I never ice skated.
You never skied?
Nope.
Threw a snowball?
I've threw some snowballs before.
Okay, well, where? Up in the mountains and Asheville?
Yeah.
Oh, so I know. I'm sorry.
No, it snowed every once in a while. Usually once a year, but then it kind of. There's been a couple years where it didn't snow at all. But I've had a little
right,
bit
a little
of snow.
Bit of snow, but not. But you know, it's amazing. You've been up here what over 2 years now.
This is my. I'm literally here three years this past month,
and with the exception of some severe storms, like 36 inches, four, whatever. We had a couple. It really had. We've had three, maybe four, five straight mild winters, and it's been that way for a long time. Our winters aren't as fierce. Our average used to be over 110 inches a year. We haven't reached 100 inches maybe once in the last 10 years.
I've been pretty impressed myself.
No, I'm sure you have in comparison to what you see. But it was a lot worse. And when I went to Oswego back from 81 to 85, it was much worse then. And I'm sure the weather was just as bad here. It was the same, practically the same place.
Man, so how old were you when you came up here?
I was, I don't know if to figure that out. I think I was 28 years old.
Really? Yeah. And you came up here to go to school?
I finished school, met someone in school. We hit it off in senior year, and she was originally from Watertown, so she wanted to live here. And that's when I got a job working at Channel 50, and I've been here ever since.
Yeah. So as through your high school, you knew you kind of wanted to get into broadcasting. What got you into broadcasting?
In my world at least, we used to do Super 8 movies in our basements. We were Star Wars fans. We were total geeks.
Big Star Wars fan.
Star Wars fan. And it was probably the best upbringing. In the beginning, in the early days, I thought it was kind of boring. I wish there was more girls involved and so forth. But we were geeks. We just were, we were kids, right? Essentially, almost right through high school. And that all that changed when I went to college and started drinking beer. I got a taste of living away from New York as it was in Oswego. So that kind of helped. Mm-hmm. And then I was looking for jobs in this area. I applied in Syracuse and Rochester. And Channel 50 had an opening as a salesperson, so I started working there.
And what made you want to get into sales? It was just the job.
It was the job that was available, and other qualifications. Coming out of Oswego with a communications and an art degree.
Yeah.
I needed to really prove myself in another area. I never even thought of sales, to tell you the truth. Because you're in sales too. Every day is a different day.
Yeah.
But in the creative process, which you also possess because you like doing this, it's good to sell the fact that you're doing this, and it's an easy sell because I would dread selling something I don't like or don't get excited for.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not saying I'd be bad at it. I'm thankful that I'm in the creative process at all times. Mm-hmm. So when you do the commercials with Johnny and so forth, that's the creative process. That's like looking forward to gym class or art class for me when I was a kid. That's something to look forward, and that gets you excited for the. You know, in my opinion, I'm sure you agree that that's more fun.
Yeah,
and it's a great way to let people know who you are too.
Yeah, it's pretty fun, and that's kind of what happened. As I kind of fell for the marketing side of things of sales. You know, I was like, I like that kind of part of it,
especially now with podcasts. Mm-hmm. Of course you're on TV, not many people have that luxury, but all this stuff is streamed afterwards, and that's become a really, really competitive area. Most of it's political, the other stuff is crazy, and 90% of it is unwatchable, really.
Right.
But it's you only get better. Like, you couldn't have dreamt thinking about 2 years ago what you're doing right now.
Right.
And you're only getting better. What you're showing me here, this is not easy. I know this isn't easy, what you're doing here.
No.
And you're doing it, which is remarkable. Yeah. Very good. Very very impressive.
That. I mean, you've obviously spoke up and helped me out, especially with the audio part of it.
Well, I tell you, audio is so important.
Yes.
Especially now that these phones have dual microphone clips. Mm-hmm. I just did an infomercial for Kevin Fear, mm-hmm. and I did everything from I do everything from this phone, the Samsung Ultra 24, everything from here. And including, miking people up with wireless microphones that go right into the USB for $100. It's $100.
Yeah.
And most people, it's amazing, Chuck. Big, big influencers, big people with, and some people in powerful places mm-hmm. are still not using it.
Yeah.
The Mr. Wonderful, when he does his off-the-cuff stuff, he doesn't use a microphone. And this is the guy on Shark Tank. Yeah. And I could sometimes I can't hear him. You hear white noise. Just go out and buy a $100 microphone and get another one so you and I can talk mm-hmm. on this without any wires or whatever and, mm-hmm. in 4K. It's incredible what we have in the palm of our hands.
And and Will Farr has
Will is incredible.
Has preached yeah. the same thing. Yeah. He's like, look, you can have your video can be whatever, but long as your audio comes through crisp, right. he's a big believer in the audio.
Right.
And that's why I'm investing into the Rodecaster.
Yeah, the Rode, yeah. And this is very sharp. Yeah. This is excellent. Yeah. So, no, you did it right.
But yeah, so now I think what I'd like to do is just kind of keep pressing this down to see, you know, I'm not in any hurry to make $1 million doing it. I'm, you know, work is fine. And honestly, I like the fact that I'm having a conversation with somebody. There's always somebody different in here. I cut
right.
my phone off and we'll talk for like an hour. And it's kind of like therapy.
You know? It is therapy.
It's,
yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of like therapy. But so how did you end up at Community?
Community became actually. I was already there. Dave
Mance, because of the
Jim Levin and Bruce Mittman took over the operation in late July of 2006, mm-hmm. which was 18 years ago. And so that's what. And I was I was doing my radio show starting just a couple of weeks prior to 9/11 in 2001. Jim and Bruce took over in 2006. I've been doing the show, with the exception of a little bit, when I wasn't working at the radio stations and working at another radio group. I've been doing it for the past over 23 years now. And this month, 23 years.
And how'd you get into the – what inspired the whole politics side of this?
That was another thing. First of all, working at a radio station has its advantages, but back in the day, when I first got here, Kevin Shank was the host of the Hotline show mm-hmm. on AM 1240, where I do my show. And this again, in the late 80s, early 90s. And then a great guy. He passed away a couple of years ago. It was very sad. He was a good guy. He was a great broadcaster. Did a lot of years in Syracuse at WSTM as well and on the radio. And then Jeff Graham, then mayor, well, he was mayor at the time, took over the Hotline show. And that's when I would fill in for Jeff every now and then in the late 90s. And mm-hmm. I also filled in a couple of times for Johnny Spisano when he went on vacay on Magic 103 at the time. But that's how I got acclimated with that show and filled in for him. I always had the bug. My dad was a big radio guy back in the day, listened to Bob Grant and other guys in New York City. But having that ability to sit like we are right now in a microphone, getting call-ins, and conducting a show, this again back in the 90s, that was a real thrill for me. Combining sales and the radio show was something that I've been doing most of my tenure here.
I mean, because you kind of think you're no matter what you're doing, you're selling. You know what I mean?
Like, right, you are. We're all salespeople.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever. Everybody, I don't care who you are. We're all salespeople.
Yeah, like whatever the topic is, you're trying to relay it and get somebody to understand it.
Right.
And or if there's a problem, you're trying to solve it through conversation.
Right.
And but like, so on your show, when did the Live at Five start?
Like I said, it started 2 weeks before 9/11.
Okay.
In 2001. And it was incredible because it was, you know, we were talking about stupid stuff, you know, political, mind you, local. And then the biggest thing in the world happened. So that took up a good, you know, year or two of you know, and then the wars and, you know, Fort Drum's involvement. So the show was really political in the early 2000s for obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
It got more and more. So plus it's on AM 1240 with Sean Hannity mm-hmm. And all the other Republican pundits. So I try to mirror that, but also talk about local stuff. It's hard to talk about local stuff, though, anymore. Local politics.
Yeah.
Because it's the same old, same old. I wish them well. I really like living here. guys like Councilman Cliff Olney are controversial. They're provocative.
Yeah.
But I think things are pretty well run.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh my God, Cliff Olney. I see him a lot.
You've interviewed him twice, I believe.
I've never had him on.
Oh, you know? Okay. I'm sorry.
I think he did one with Tyler.
Tyler interviewed him, which makes sense because Tyler does the news end of stuff.
Yeah.
But Cliff is himself a celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, and I always said he was a poor man's Bob Goulet. I don't know. He was an actor. Some Enchanted Evening or. And he played up here. Good looking guy, by the way, like Cliff is.
Yeah.
But he kind of reminds me of him. But he's controversial, but he does have a following.
Yeah.
And people say, because you know, Cliff is definitely a genuine liberal. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
But he's got a lot of following. And then a lot of liberal voters. The last three presidents were all Democrats. Most of Watertown voted for Democrat. So
really?
Cliff is one of those guys who stirs the drink, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the conservative side of Watertown can't quite understand that.
Yeah, I mean, I met him at the, I think the first time I spoke to him was at the Irish parade.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to drive the Grand Marshal in a Mustang from the Caprares.
You were with the Grand Marshal or you were the Grand Marshal?
I drove the Grand Marshal. He sat in the back. I don't know how I ended up doing it. I just volunteered. They said,
right,
we need somebody to drive in the parade. I said, hey, me.
Right, right.
I've never been in a parade before.
Did someone say the Grand Marshal should have been driving you?
Yeah. No. But no, I think I might talk to Cliff and get him on here.
Yeah, you got it. No doubt. He seems
pretty interesting.
It's not like he doesn't have the gift of gab.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Just get him going.
Man, and when I'm telling you, when I'm sitting in your studio watching you go and hit all them things, I'm like, wow, it's incredible.
So it's really it's the phone mic, and mm-hmm. I got to pot up the music and on and off, and my microphone, and people calling in, like I said.
Yeah, but you're sharp, dude.
Well, gracias, thank you.
And you kind of keep it pretty funny, too. It's serious stuff.
Right.
But, dude, you've had me rolling. I'll catch you every once in a while, and you've talked to somebody, and the way you kind of... I don't know. It's pretty funny.
I don't know if I got it from my mom and dad or both of them, but you know, we always had some type of, like I said earlier, gift of gab, mm-hmm. where when you're speaking to someone, you talk in very short terms and quick in and out. So sometimes that comes across as in your face type stuff, out of the blue.
Yeah.
And I'm quirky, so I think that, and of course the New York accent and like yours. That made me a foreigner for so many years, and even to this day, there's not many New Yorkers around here. There are, but not many.
Yeah, it is weird. And the thing is I can differentiate pretty good because obviously they all sound different to me.
Do they? Yeah,
of course. You sound way different than they do, and which is it's wild. So, did you say your dad was in radio, or was into the radio?
No. I'm glad you asked that. He listened to the radio all the time, either mm-hmm. beautiful music or talk radio. And this is, again, back in the 70s when I would hear, I'd be at home and he'd be doing the bills and so forth. But for 25 years, he was a New York City police officer. He worked at the 75th Precinct in Brooklyn during the worst possible times, by the way. But he was a cop. And I had a lot of, the family had a lot of cops, cousins and uncles and so forth. But he did that for 25 years and then started a completely different career in sales himself when he retired from the police department in 1978, and it changed his life. He got into sales. He started selling trucking routes for this company called Mercury Trucking. It was in Queens. It was on the river, and then he got into selling insurance for his Knights of Columbus, something he was part of for many, many years, and he made a very good living from that. But he learned that he should have been a salesman from the beginning. But he became a cop in 1952, and he stayed that way until 1978.
I'm going to tell you something that's kind of wild. My dad was also a police officer.
Was he?
Yeah, he was chief of police. I was kind of a celebrity when I was born in Great Falls, South Carolina, really small town.
Right.
I was in the paper a couple times as a little baby.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody knew
the police chief's son. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
were you like Giuliani's kid when he waving in the background?
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, so he stayed down there. He was the chief of police for a few years. I think for about 4 years, until I was about 4 years old. Then we moved up north. He wanted to get closer to Charlotte, I guess.
Huh.
And he wanted to, I don't know, he's inspired to get out of the small town. But
right.
He ended up moving to another small town where he became the captain. And then he ended up on the sheriff's department and became friends with the sheriff. We were always out of his lake house as a kid swimming. But what I was going to get to is how your dad was into the radio. My dad got me into the radio because he used to listen to John Boy and Billy.
Right, right. Who are still on, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And he would write into them and they like some jokes. I don't know. He'd tell me some stuff.
But was he Jackie the Joke Man?
Yeah. I don't know what he did, but he had. I guess he had met. I don't know. He talked like he knew him or something.
Yeah.
And then I listened to John Boy Billy, and I was like, man, I really influenced me on the radio side of things. I think about it often. And so I thought that was kind of wild how your dad was a cop and got you in the radio.
Yeah, I'm glad, too, because was talk radio back in the day.
And I forgot to tell you, he went on a whole nother career path as well. He, his dad was a plumber, right? So my dad did a little plumbing on the side, but I guess that was, I don't know, he wanted to do something extraordinarily different.
Right.
He got his wastewater license, and his water license became the wastewater treatment plant manager for Clover, South Carolina, and then did all these other side EA services and stuff like that. But yeah, he went that way and retired from the town and got state retired. Well, all that police stuff too. So it's kind of neat.
So a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
We talk differently.
Yeah. We married somebody from up here.
We married some from, that's a big thing.
Yeah.
And what else? I mean, we're going to die the same age everyone else in the last couple of days?
You got to keep
83, 84. Johnny Amos was 84. Pete Rose was 83.
And
the guy from Beverly Hills Cop was 76. That was last. Chris Christopherson was 88.
Yeah, 88. Yeah.
And then some, who else? I don't know. It's funny how that happens.
Yeah.
Like you have nothing for months, and then four big celebrity names die in the same week.
I've always heard it comes in threes.
Yeah,
or something,
fours now. Well, four. Again, the guy I can't remember his name. John something. He died last week. He was in Beverly Hills Cop and Midnight Run with Charles Grodin and Robert De Niro. That was good. But anyway,
what was the guy from American Pickers?
Right, that's the one. He just died. He died. He had a stroke 2 years ago. What's his name? George?
I can't remember.
Yeah, he died today.
Today or yesterday.
60 years old.
Yeah.
I thought he was old. No. Anyway, and it was a great show. And by the way, he came up here.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's a guy right there. He was a collector in Sackett's Harbor. And they did a big, big segment in his place.
Really?
Yes. And in fact, one of the properties that they walked in was haunted. And the guys from the Pickers there, they felt a little. And he had a trip. I've watched that show, and I'm sure you have too. I'm forgetting his name, but he was in Sackett, and he had a huge collection. And yes, they were very, very impressed with him.
So here's a couple things. I had Eric Slurry on here who met the guy.
Yeah.
He was in a TV show called Full Throttle Saloon.
Right, right.
And he sells, now he's the vice president of sales for Full Throttle Saloon Shine.
Nice.
And so he's met all these people, and I had him sitting over here. Also had a psychic in here who was apparently predicting these things. I've been watching her on Facebook.
Yeah.
Predicting these celebrity deaths, and now they got me.
Wait a minute, she predicted?
I don't know, something, I didn't, I'm just seeing a conversation between her and another person. They were talking about.
This is, what's this, weeks ago, what's his name, Good Times, John Amos, yeah, he's Good Times, yeah.
Yeah, no, so, but they also got me wanting to do, they want me to do, I know, I'm not saying they want me to, but I might do it, like a ghost hunt kind of thing.
Really?
We got these psychics, we got some, we got permission to shoot a longer show for right here. I hadn't really experienced ghost stuff since I was a kid, so I'm not sure if it's real or not. So I'm kind of really skeptical about it. But I like spooky season Halloween.
Why not? Yeah. We're already in. I mean, Halloween up here starts in Labor Day.
With
decorations. Every crappy house gets the best Halloween decorations.
Right. And what do you know about Empire Square?
Empire Square across the street. That's Vernette's place.
Yeah, so I've been in contact
with
her.
Very good.
She wants me to do it there.
Yeah, and she knows, she did a downtown news segment, which plays here on NBC 45, and she talked about Founders Rock and how Public Square.
Was that her on
that's
there?
That's her. That
was
Vernette.
You do a really good job with that.
Well, gracias.
I like when I catch you on there, it's really interesting.
It's been hard for me this summer to do more. I'm going to do one on the New Fountain. The New Fountain came back, so I'm working on that. But the other big thing is this Joe Foy across the street at the old Strand Theater. You don't remember it as the Strand, but this big construction project in Franklin behind me on Franklin Street. that is the unbelievable how much, first of all, it's a huge multi-million dollar project, but it's going to transform downtown. It really will.
Yeah.
I can't, so, and it's going to help where you, you know, where you're sitting right now, you're in a perfect spot right here. So that and the
that little cool thing they got on the roof over there. Did you see that?
I knew they were going to build. I haven't seen that.
It's it looks
like an outdoor patio.
Yeah, it looks like an outdoor patio, which is
it's going to be spectacular. Yeah. So my next downtown news will be a follow up of that. What it looked, I did that back in January, and they were just pretty much getting started. Now it's coming to fruition, but that whole block is going to be.
I really do like the down. I really do.
Yeah, no, you are coming, Chuck. You are coming at a perfect time. That is, if we don't go into get into World War III,
right?
But we do have a fort here. For better or worse, it might be a target for Putin if any of his missiles actually work.
Yeah, dude, I think
or
about
we'll
that
be fortified because of it. Yeah.
Did you
And if half the world goes, the other half doesn't want to live either.
Stuff?
What's that now?
Did you see Iran on, with the rockets they fired on?
Yeah. None of them reached. I mean, some shrapnel.
Really?
Yeah. The Iron Dome, which the Israelis created, the defense system.
Yeah.
They've had it for decades, and it works perfectly. And the stuff that they're getting from Iran is made in Iran.
Look at this video.
Yeah.
Did you see the one I posted?
Yeah. And I was also. There's video on one of the it was probably X, of just one video building rather in Beirut getting hit after another, like 10 in a row, with incredible, yeah I saw this, yeah.
That's got to be like horrifying.
Yeah, and they say what's happening is the shrapnel. Or maybe the shrapnel bombs. I've never heard of that before until today.
Yeah.
But I just think a lot of it's just everything is exploding in there. You know, they bombarded them so much, they figured the only way to get past the Iron Dome is just to throw whatever we got at them. And some of them, including the actual dismemberment, you know, of the bombs themselves, is going to, you know, do damage too. So that's probably the worst Iran has actually done so far, but I can't see him getting any. Israel's just going to destroy him. And this is not going to be pretty. And they don't need our help, to tell you the truth. They can buy missiles from us. We can supply them with a lot of intelligence and so forth. But they're doing all of this pretty much on their own.
Yeah.
So, and we're watching it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And not to mention what's going on in Ukraine, of course.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Somehow does that tie into that?
No, none of it does, except they all hate the Jews. Yeah. But what's interesting is Zelensky's Jewish. And, you know, I'm a big Tucker Carlson fan. And he brought up the fact that Zelensky isn't the guy that we make him out to be, because, you know, we make him out to be a hero, like Madero down there in Venezuela, like he's, you know, and yet they pick on the guy in Chile or Argentina, the guy with the crazy haircut. But the Putin thing could have been avoided, from what I gather, from what I can see. I forget what it was. Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. How did I relate that? I'm sorry, I just lost my frame of thought.
You're all right.
But yeah, so to me, the world is at an abyss right now, overlooking an abyss. Whether or not we step into it, Chuck, I don't know. But it's the close. Look, I'm 61 years old. It's never been this close in my life. That's for sure. I thought we were talking today about the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, to end World War II in Japan in 1945, and I always thought that would be the only time we'd ever talk about it. Other than the missile crisis of 1962. But now what we're seeing is something I couldn't have dreamt of. It's almost like a nightmare. I can't imagine God would allow this to happen, or the aliens watching us. but just the fact, Chuck, that we're talking about it is something I didn't think would happen either. But that's where we are right now.
Yeah. And then I swear, when I see stuff like that, I'm like, man, I'm right here next to this fort.
Yeah, that's good,
that
though.
Could be a good
it's like
thing.
Like being next to a big bully when you need them.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a target, but everything's a target. I don't think that's going to happen. Because here's the big reason why I say that is because, you know, Putin has lost they guesstimate over 250,000, maybe 300,000 of his own men in the last 2+ years. And most of that was with our stuff, with our support.
Wow.
And so if that's not a reason to start World War III, I don't know what is. I said, well, if you use F-16s, now we'll really – now we're using F-16s over there. So, it's like pushing the red line like what Gaddafi did years ago. Mm-hmm. He had this red line of death. If you get to this point, I'm going to react. And then we did. And then he said, well, now the red line is here. Red line. So I don't know where the red line is with Putin, but it's getting closer.
Right.
But the fact that he's lost that many, imagine in this country losing hundreds of, and by the way, Russia has half of the population we do, even though they're massively bigger. Mm-hmm. But they 300,000 of their own men, not returning, young men. And they're recruiting people from other countries. They're taking 50-year-old guys off buses. Wow. So if Putin hasn't reacted after this, then I don't know what pushes his buttons, to tell you the truth.
Man.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry for this. Most of the conversation, I know you had Peter Beams on here.
Yeah.
And, you know, cheery stuff.
No. But no, this is
what we talk about on my show every day.
This goes in any direction. It don't matter.
You can't ignore the obvious. Mm-hmm. You can't, because it's here. I mean, the news, the mechanisms are there to show you it. They're not showing you everything, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Just like somehow or other, you know, your home state of North Carolina got real hit. Yeah. Tennessee got real hit. If that were a Republican president, especially Trump, not reacting to it, like we didn't see Biden nor the candidate who wants to be our president, Kamala Harris, go to any of these places like Asheville.
Yeah.
And yet if that were a Republican, it'd be vilified for that. But, and so that's an obvious question.
I seen a picture of Trump down there.
Yeah, Trump was down there. He brought in a massive truck, gasoline, a GoFundMe, a $1 million account. And obviously he's campaigning, but this is an ex-president. A modern-day Grover Cleveland of our time, wanting to be our president again. He should have been in 2020. But the more and more I think about it, it's actually better that we got to see what the left could do for 4 years. They totally screwed it up, and now we want the guy that was here 4 years ago to fix it again. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, if that doesn't happen, I don't know what Watertown's going to look like, Fort Drum, or anything, to tell you the truth.
Man.
Yeah. Again, I'm thinking bringing the show down. I don't mean to do that because,
don't worry about it.
But like I said, it's just wow. And it's funny because I bring this up at family gatherings, and I'll say, and someone's, Glenn, you don't always talk about it. I say, I know you have a child, you have children, you have a mortgage, you have things to worry about. I'll do all the other worrying for you.
Yeah.
Because this shit's happening.
Right.
You know, it's not going away. That's for sure.
I don't know, dude. It is. I don't know.
Yeah.
It really.
Maybe we both need therapy.
Yeah. I never really was big into it until I was comfortable when Trump was in there.
Yeah.
I was really comfortable.
Like, you were good.
We had this conversation before.
Yeah, I said
I was comfortable in my ride to work because I felt like somebody was watching out for it.
Right.
Know what I mean? Now I'm kind of like.
Yeah.
I don't have the protector, I guess you would say. Which is weird.
It is weird because I don't know where you... I'm assuming you're from a conservative state. That doesn't necessarily mean... And there's a lot of people that are ambivalent. They're neither. They don't care. And they're the people that ultimately make the decision on who gets into the office.
Yeah,
that's scary because they're not paying attention. And all the other people that are just... Mark Cuban, as an example.
I listened to a podcast of him on it today.
Yeah. Did you? So Mark Cuban all of a sudden is saying that Kamala Harris is a genius in so many ways. Yeah. It's like, she's so concise. She's so clear on her agenda. And some guy made the comparison to Mark Cuban, or rather showed a segment of Mark Cuban, getting down on a candidate, guy trying to sell his product. It's like, you're a scam. You did this. You did that. Here's a guy that really looks into things before he puts his mind and money to it. Mm-hmm. And yet, the same guy is saying Kamala Harris is a genius, and he knows he thinks that she could run the free world.
Yeah.
It's like, wait, something's wrong here. Mm-hmm. Something is very. You could show me Adele or Pink or anyone is paid to do ads for the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
They do it for nothing.
Yeah.
But Mark Cuban is a billionaire. What does he? Why is he doing it? So I'm not saying these guys are clones, mm-hmm. like the QAnon type, or saying like they're not real. Yeah. A lot of people are saying Joe Biden's not real.
Lizard I just people.
This sellout, the people that sell out
yeah.
to the Democratic Party, Hollywood, academia. Randy Weingarten is the most dangerous person in the world. And if you ever look at her and just not listen to her and just watch her gyrations behind the podium, she has every movement like Adolf Hitler. It's incredible how she mimics him. But anyway, and she might as well be because she's very dangerous.
What do you think about these people shooting at Trump?
Well, the first guy was a better. Well, we don't know what the second guy was going to be, but the second guy, I forget his name now, on the golf course, never got a shot off. Thank God.
Right.
But when you see his mugshot, it's almost he has this face. He's telling people. He's telling all of his followers that I'm sorry. You know what I was trying to do, and I let you down. And meanwhile, if you were shooting at anyone, including the ex-president of the United States, your mugshot would be like, oh, I really screwed up. But then again, your mindset is different. This guy wanted to kill Trump and knew that there would be supporters with the with that smile he put on for his own mugshot. And for the most part, the guy is connected to the high people, you know, people in high places. Been around the world, doesn't have a job, has no income, so there's some crazy connection there. But worse more, Chuck, they did a survey recently that of Democrats, Democrat voters, 27% of them wish that either one of those assassins completed their task.
I saw this or
and
heard
27, and I think 27 to 24% more in addition. That's 50% didn't know, didn't have an answer. So you got to remember, look, if you don't have an answer, that means you wanted the ex-president to be killed. But yet 27% actually said, yes, I wish these guys executed their assassination attempts and efforts. That's half the country, or at least half the Democratic voters. That is disgusting. I don't know what's worse, what's going on abroad or what's going on right here.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty extreme. And I don't want to see anybody that's just doing their job get killed. You know
right,
what
right,
I mean?
Right. Well, especially, yeah. And how they allowed that first guy, Crooks, to get away with it, and he was
like 300
yards.
You know,
I was
driving when we were. When was it?
Was that Butler, Pennsylvania?
I was in Pennsylvania driving down Pennsylvania when this happened. We were going to
Hershey Park.
No, we were going to Maryland to drop my kids off.
Oh, okay,
to meet my parents for the summer and. And we're in Pennsylvania, and it came on. My daughter saw it online or something.
Yeah, right,
and
right.
I'm like, wait a minute, we're in Pennsylvania. Right. Where is Trump? Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Let's go see.
I was like, the whole state's going to get shut down. Right, I'm telling my kids and my wife to Google it.
Right.
Yeah, she's like, she told you he just got shot. I'm like, but where? Are we coming up on the exit? Sure. Should we get there? We got to do something?
Yeah, yeah. You were on the wrong, other side, of the state.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea. I didn't even know he was in Pennsylvania. But I was in Pennsylvania when that happened. And then I started seeing like how does this guy get up on this roof and do all this stuff?
And he scoped it out for days prior to that, Trump had done a rally there before, so I'm sure he looked at photographs and figured stuff out, hid the gun somewhere, and at one point he was in plain sight doing stuff that Robert De Niro looked like he was doing in Taxi Driver. I mean, he was so obvious.
And we talked about Robert De Niro.
I know,
last time
too many times because I can't stand his politics, but his acting, he's one of the greatest actors. Yeah. In great movies, too.
So, dude, so let's get back to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So, do you have any kids?
No, I don't.
Never had any kids?
No, I never did.
Really?
I don't think I did. No, I was in a relationship, marriage, and that didn't work out after a short period of time. Then I had another relationship with someone who wasn't looking to have children either and kind of shared the same ideology and stuff. So.
Wow.
I don't think it was ever in the cards for me, to tell you the truth.
That's all right.
Yeah. It's not that I couldn't.
You got a dog or something?
No, I'm allergic to animals. We have a neighbor's cat called Crackers. He's a neighborhood cat, too. Everyone knows this cat.
Yeah?
And he was gone for a couple of months during summer, and I was very sad.
We're on vacation.
And I was thinking someone picked him up, or he got lost, maybe got killed, whichever. And he showed up a couple of weeks ago, and I was almost crying. It's like, yeah, Crackers, he comes in, we feed him, he likes to be petted.
Yeah.
Most cats scurry, you know, ooh. I'll eat your food, but I'm going to run out of here. Which, you know, we love that. But I'm allergic to cats, so I can't have one.
Oh,
but
man,
I love animals.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend, you know, Carrie at the station, her dog was missing. Her dog, Wyatt, went running off because he thought the family left him because they were all going together to Pennsylvania. And the dog said, well, I'm adios, you know.
Yeah.
And then he went on a 9-day excursion in the woods of Jefferson County. But then he came back 9 days later.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets cold up here, bro.
Yeah, we've had a couple of cold nights. But the falls, again, like I was saying earlier, global warming works. Mm-hmm. It might not work in South Carolina or Florida, for that matter.
And I certainly go to Florida. Arizona, yeah, Texas. Yankees is, down there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the oppressive weather.
Yeah.
The heat. You know, I can't imagine living south of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah.
So now that that is, the heat is gravitated to the north, it's reasonable. You know, when mm-hmm. they do those Bassmaster fishing tournaments,
yeah, yeah,
all
yeah.
those southern guys. They come up and say, I can't believe this is great.
Telling you, it does. People were complaining about the heat. I'm like, man, it's just come up here. Good.
Yeah.
You ought to feel the humidity beating down on you. That's why we talk slower, I think.
Right. Oh,
chill out and be under the shade tree, you know.
And being in the true four seasons in the Northeast, you mm-hmm. get in and out of a car quickly and you start talking quicker.
Yeah, yeah.
And down, you know, in the South, it was different.
And I feel like I got time back because July and August, you know, you're not coming outside down there. You
no
know,
way.
It's so hot, you know.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, God, it gets hot in May down there.
Oh, yeah. I remember like in March one time, I was fishing. We were on the Broad River, and we were in a little John boat kind of deal, a little bit bigger, bigger than a John boat, but it was metal. And and then we were going to go onto this real thin part of the like a creek kind of,
right.
And I hopped out in my boxers and pulled the boat, and it wasn't cold. I mean, it
in
was
March.
A little cold,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It wasn't real cold,
yeah.
And fished in there. I mean, I know it, you know, March is a good time to catch some bass down there.
Oh, I'm sure. But essentially, you could do things down there. Almost a year. You can go fishing in January, right?
Yeah, yeah. And now, if I go back down there in the wintertime, I'm gonna probably be out all year round. I mean,
yeah,
it gets
right.
cold.
Yeah, right.
It gets cold, but
yeah, I'm sure that higher elevations and so forth. But yeah. it gets cold up here, as you know.
Yeah.
But last winter, I don't think we went below zero once in the entire year. And if we did, it was maybe once, maybe twice. And it certainly wasn't the winters that we've had. Literally mm-hmm. 34, 36, 38 below, which wasn't that long ago. It was 8 years ago we got really severe cold weather.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened since. But last year, we didn't have anything. And that's a big thing. That's a really, really big thing. That's strange.
Yeah.
I'm not a big, what do they call it, environmental. You know, I'm not worried about global warming as much as the Earth has more to do with than we do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely changed, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's different. I mean, yeah. I heard that, you know, when the first winter I was here, I mean, I don't know if it's because I wasn't used to it, but
right.
I remember that we had a whole week of below zero.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, I remember my eyelashes crystallizing walking around that lot. I remember it getting really cold.
Right.
Then the next winter, a lot of snow.
Yeah.
I mean, we had the blizzard.
Right, right. A couple of big storms,
yeah. And then around Thanksgiving, we had they dropped a, like, 5 foot.
5 feet, yeah, yeah. Light stuff, though, yeah. Real light, which is crucial. Because if you get a lot of inches of powder or lighter snow, it's a pain in the ass, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And it caused havoc, that's for sure. Yeah. But it could have been worse.
Yeah, yeah. But it wasn't as cold.
Right, exactly.
And then the next winter, which last winter.
Yeah.
Wasn't that bad.
Yeah, not bad at all.
Not that bad.
Yeah. And look at the fall now.
And I'm saying that's a trend in 3 years that I've seen. And yeah, the fall now.
And fall now is incredible.
Like it's being.
The leaves are still on the trees.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them. I mean, it's going to. I don't know about the world if we'll all be here, but clearly, the more and more people realize quality of life, like mm-hmm. you've had all your life in South Carolina, but the heat becomes a factor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is fresh water is huge. And one day it's not going to be as much of an option for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the fact that we're sitting on one of the greatest lakes ever, the biggest lakes on the planet,
yeah.
And the whole area is bountiful, and we're a water town. You watch in the next upcoming decades, anyone near fresh water is going to benefit from tomorrow's society, and I see that happening with us. Particularly if the temperatures, you know, the winters that for that matter. I don't want to see snowmobiling destroyed by any means or
skiing
we have around here. That's important. Don't get me wrong. Tug Hill, as long as they get their fair share of lake effect weather or snow, that's great. And we should always get snow here. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's a lot of people get are afraid of the place because of the reputation of these unbelievable winters. Mm-hmm. And I think they're a thing of the past, at least for now.
I can't get a single relative to come up
to
here.
To come up here, yeah.
In the wintertime.
Not even in the wintertime, yeah, because they've been told, well, that's crazy.
Well, I was terrified myself because I was like, man, I ain't never drove in the snow before.
Right.
I don't know what's going to happen when I get up there. All I know is it's called Snowtown.
Right.
And so I got a place over here next to the fire department, so I know that they're going to plow it.
Right.
But now, I mean,
that's smart.
Yeah, so last year, I had a little fun driving in the snow.
Yeah, sure.
It wasn't too bad.
And do you drive whatever you want, or do you have loaner cars, or?
Oh, I'm on my third car in 3 years. Third, up there.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So that excess, yeah.
Yeah. So I
sometimes
ended up,
it's every week you get a new car. Or whichever.
Yeah. Well, I came up here in a single cab, 08 lifted F-150.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's me.
Yeah.
Then I got to I walked around the lot, picked out a truck that I wanted. I told my wife, and which is I tell everybody, don't go home and ask your wife because she's going to say no. She told me no. Right,
right, right, right.
So I'm like, dang. So I found an all-wheel drive, cool car, heated seats, remote start, all that. It was a Dodge Charger.
Okay.
I said, let me get that.
Yeah, that's practical.
All wheel drive. It was
right,
cool.
Right,
you
right.
know what I mean? And so I drove that for a year, and then I've been looking at the Accords.
Yeah,
and they had the incentivized interest rate, and I was like, you know what? I can hop into like a really good interest rate
car, right. Yeah,
and drive a brand new Honda.
Right,
so I've never owned a new car before. Got into that.
Yeah,
and I drove it for a year.
Yeah, yeah.
Then, all right, so this is where
I'm not. The Accord was nice.
Well, the Accord's really nice.
It's one of the greatest cars
ever
made.
And here's the thing that I got into. I did the Honda testing on it for a year before it came out.
Yeah.
It's the Honda Prologue. Now, it's Honda's first full electric SUV.
Nice.
So it's built in a GM manufacturing place,
right.
plant or whatever. So it looks like a Chevy Blazer, but it's built with Honda parts and it's full electric. And I leased it. So they had, you get your tax credit up front. And then when I leased it, Honda was doing a bunch of stuff for employees. So it got me out of the stuff that I rolled over from the Charger because it just didn't hold its value.
Right.
And it was a little bit older anyways. So I rolled over a little bit. And so it got me out of my negative equity. And I got into a lease because I literally worked 5 minutes from work.
Yeah.
I don't really leave Watertown, and if I do, I drive my wife's car.
Right.
So I got into a lease. The lease works for me. Ate my negative equity up, and I'm driving a really super cool electric SUV.
And it's a Honda.
A Honda.
Which makes sense because you work at a Honda deal.
Yeah.
And you did you sell it to yourself?
I sold it myself. Yeah. I was the first one. I even had the guy that drives the Tesla Cybertruck.
Yeah, yeah.
I had him come down and do a video of it.
Yeah.
And to promote it for him, because he's a big TikTok guy.
Yeah, sure.
So he did a video of it, and I after he left, I was like, man, I'm gonna get one of these. I'm gonna get one. So like a week later, I texted. I said, dude, I'm gonna get it. So I got in it. Then Nigel got one. Then another guy got one up there, and then Lee just got one.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's like all these Honda employees driving these Prologues.
Well,
Lee got one for his girlfriend.
It just goes to show the car that sells itself.
Yeah.
It sells it right to the people that sell them.
Yeah.
Not that that's uncommon.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it's a good, if you're going to work at a dealership, Honda's one of them.
Yeah, it's honestly, I learned that.
And
too.
Don't get me wrong, all of, the cars have, I have noticed
that
the car manufacturing business, no matter who it is, everyone said, oh, this is better. The cars in general are so superior. Than they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, and my first car job, I was in Charlotte, North Carolina. This was the end of 08. And I went to a dealership with a friend, and I said, we'll get some jobs detailing. Because I was doing construction. I was doing putting together door frames. So we were building doors in a shop, really nice doors. And I was like, man, I need to do something different.
Yeah.
So went to a car dealership, and I thought I was gonna get a job detailing. I was like, and because this guy told me, he's like, oh yeah, you make a lot of money if you detail. I was like, that sounds like a cool gig. And I went in there, I sat down with the manager. He's like, I'm putting you on the sales floor. I was, all right. And I went across the street to the Goodwill, bought me some suits and ties, and I learned Suzuki's, right?
Selling Suzuki's. Right. Yeah.
And I knew them all within like a couple of weeks because there wasn't a whole lot in them. And this was when the recession was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it for a little bit, and then I just couldn't. Then all of a sudden, you're filling out credit apps, turning in deals, but nobody could buy anything because of the recession. And ended up leaving and getting back into getting into construction again, worked my way back into sales, and then boom, came back up here.
Yeah.
We're up here.
Yeah. But, and you love it. Yeah. And but again, it does help to have that little extra component, especially like what you're doing here, mm-hmm. and social media. That makes you makes you feel better waking up every morning.
Yeah. You kind of do something you're passionate for.
Right,
man.
Right.
Like it's really, I mean, I like it. I really do.
It's a rush. Not to mention you're a boxer.
Yeah. And that was something you were saying earlier about how you liked doing the talking, how you like talking on the radio.
Yeah.
You like that. I found that I thought about it. I was a pitcher when I played baseball when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was a pitcher, as a catcher, and then I was kind of, I always liked the not the spotlight, but I like the pressure. I thrive under the pressure of being out front.
Like, you know, like I mean? Right now in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The playoffs are huge. The Mets yesterday against your Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
I don't know, did you see, you were probably working. Yeah. I was playing a little hooky, to be quite honest. But I wanted to see it because, if both teams split and both teams wanted to win the first game, mm-hmm. that they put in their starters, and the Mets were losing 3-0, and then they went ahead, and then the Braves went ahead, and then the Mets went ahead in the ninth inning, and they almost lost it in the bottom. That was one of the greatest, and the pressure that those young guys have, but just in that game alone.
Honestly, that was the only question I prepared for you was it the Yankees or the Mets?
Oh, it's the Yankees. Okay. I appreciate the Mets because, and I'll tell you why, Met fans are the worst people on the planet, and I know that because I was surrounded by them with living in Woodhaven, Queens. Everyone and their brother was a Met fan. There was a couple of Yankee fans here and there, and I realized that, well, quite frankly, Yankee and Met fans are all assholes. You just don't know that until you're on one of the other sides. but I do appreciate the fact that the Mets were so bad early on this season that they came back the way they did.
Yeah.
Plus, once again, they're Met fans different from Yankee fans. Of course, the Yankees have had more success over the years and decades. Met fans are fair weather fans. They abandoned them early on. I didn't. I saw them streaking, winning 8-9 games in a row early on after losing like 7 in a row. They were streaky, but any team to come back like that means there's something there.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, they made it to the playoffs. And they, that game yesterday against Atlanta, it was one of the most classic games I've ever seen.
Man, I missed it. I was living vicariously through a guy I met up here who was on the movie or the show Walking Dead.
He was
at the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm gonna get him on the show, but I think I'm gonna have to do a Skype thing.
Is he local?
No, he came up here for the AnchorCon thing.
Oh, in Clayton.
Yeah. I met him there, and I've been talking to him through Facebook.
I'm sure that was a blast.
Yeah, it was really cool.
And did you interview people on the floor? I'm sorry, I missed that.
So I saw it on TV that it was coming to town, and there was a podcast that was coming.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, let me see if I can not go to the AnchorCon, but talk to the guys for the podcast. So I waited the Saturday night, talked to them, brought them in here. I didn't record it for TV or anything, but we talked on this and talked about Star Wars and stuff and what goes on there. And then I said, well, it kind of sold me on. I was like, I'm going to come the next day. We came and I hopped on their podcast because they were doing a live thing. And then I took my son, and we checked it out. It was really cool.
I'm sure it was. You know? And those people are very passionate about that. They all get, they all get dressed up. They know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And I love that because, I was a Star Wars guy like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the first generation of Star Wars because I was in high school when it came out.
Yeah.
It was tailor-made for me. I felt like, wow, this is incredible stuff. And yet the ones made George Lucas made them in the early 2000s, and then the new ones and the endless cycles of the it's really bad. It doesn't compare to the first three made in the 70s and 80s.
But my thing is I watched them when I was a kid, right? So obviously they came out before.
Right, I know.
So
right.
I watched them, and I had, dude, it was – and really where it got me was when – he released the new ones George Lucas did, and they had the Midichlorians or whatever.
Yeah, right, right,
not
right.
Everybody could be a Jedi, kind of broke my heart. Right. But
yeah.
But I'm a fan, man.
And like Jar Jar, it was really bad. It was awful. Weird.
I didn't honestly. I got out of it till I was honestly right about 30 years old. I got back into.
So you
it.
Appreciated the ones that were made before you were born, then?
Absolutely.
Ah, see, now
I was
that's
a big
good.
Fan of those. And then they made the remake where they added a couple of little digital.
Yeah, I didn't like that. Yeah, I mean, Jabba the Hutt was okay. I guess.
Yeah. But yeah, I was a fan before that. I watched them all over and over and over and over. My brother. He had them all on VHS, and he's a little bit younger than me, but he watched them. He had all the books.
So you understood that,
as kids. Yeah, I understand the value of the original story.
Because here's, and not to interrupt, but what's interesting is that this whole geek society of kids that grew up with the George Lucas ones, and for that matter, the ones today, they love that. And they say the ones made in 2001, 2002, whichever, were superior, and that the ones made in my time were inferior because they didn't have CGI effects. It was too campy.
Yeah.
It was like a Western in space. Really, that's what Star Wars
that's
was.
That's what it is.
It was a Western in space. Yeah. But now the third series with Samuel L. Jackson, everyone's in hoods.
Yeah,
Everyone has hairdos that take 8 hours to do. Floating in space. Everything's dark. It was the prequel to the original four. Yeah. It didn't add up at all. Lucas sells out to Disney. They got much worse. Now they're totally woke, and Disney's losing a boatload of money.
Yeah.
It couldn't have happened to a better company.
Yeah. All right, Glenn, that's enough right there, bro.
How long are we on?
An hour and 11.
Okay.
That's good.
Is that good?
That's good. I got to turn it to 23 minutes and 55 seconds.
All right, so by the way, I hope J.D. Vance, that starts in a little bit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I got to go home once then.
All right.
Hey. Good. Chuck, thank you. Much success.
Yeah, thank you.
No surprise. Thank you very much. And by the way...